Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. There's an issue which has been lying quietly beneath the headlines, but is now worthy of attention because of its importance. To the best of my knowledge, no nation has a separate consulate in a foreign nation in which it has an embassy. There is a section of the embassy that deals with consular activities. Israel declared Jerusalem to be its capital almost immediately after Israel came into existence, but the United States kept its embassy in Tel Aviv. It had a consular office in Jerusalem to deal with the Palestinians. In 1996, the United States recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, kept its embassy in Tel Aviv and a consular office in Jerusalem to deal with the Palestinians. The United States did not move its embassy to Jerusalem until President Trump did so 2 years ago, at the same time closed the consular service to the Palestinians and moved all the consular services to the embassy. Now the Biden administration is talking of reopening a consular service to the Palestinians in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. The basic premise in the field of international relations that the policy and actions of each individual nation are dictated exclusively by its need to look after its own interests. Even when it appears that one nation is offering voluntary assistance to another or being extremely generous, one does not need an in-depth examination to reveal that such action in the long run benefits that country. And so it is with the United States and their seemingly extreme generosity to our nation. The leverage which they achieve by their beneficence is enormous, and we are now feeling the pressure of that leverage. The demand that Israel allow the creation of a Palestinian consulate in Jerusalem, our capital, is nothing less than a flagrant breach of Israel's sovereignty, and we simply cannot allow it. We must keep an eye on this issue. I'll be back after the break.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. There is a new hot button item in the relationship between Israel and the United States, and it has to be watched closely because there is a strong probability that it may come to a head within a few weeks at most, because the issue has been waiting for the budget to be passed here in Israel, and the budget was passed last week. What is this item? It is a U.S. consulate for the Palestinians in Jerusalem. Israel has told the Biden administration that it is opposed to any plan to reopen the U.S. consulate general that services the Palestinians in Jerusalem. The reason is the city is the undivided capital of the Jewish state. And our Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, told reporters this on Saturday night. Keep in mind that the United States has embassies all over the world, primarily in the capital of the countries in which they are, and they may have consulates in other cities in the same country, like Israel has an embassy in Washington and consulates in New York, San Francisco, Chicago, and I believe Philadelphia. At any rate, you do not have two embassies or a consulate and an embassy in the same city. Our Prime Minister said, "My position, which as presented to the Americans by myself and Foreign Minister Lapid, is that there is no place for an American consulate that serves the Palestinians in Jerusalem. We have expressed our position to the United States determinedly, quietly, without drama, and I hope it will be understood that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel and only Israel." Lapid, the foreign secretary, backed up Bennett, and he said that sovereignty in Jerusalem belongs to only one country, the State of Israel. This is a principled stance of the State of Israel, and we are against the opening of a consulate in Jerusalem. The issue here is Jerusalem and not a consular for the Palestinians. The U.S. was welcome to open a consulate for the Palestinians in Ramallah, where the Palestinian Authority is located, which is not part of Israel. Keep in mind that former President Donald Trump closed the long-standing U.S. Consulate General in Jerusalem back in 2019. This consulate had serviced the Palestinians and acted as a de facto embassy to the Palestinian Authority. It had provided a direct line between the Palestinian Authority and Washington. In other words, the embassy here in, at that time, Tel Aviv, now in Jerusalem, was not part of that chain, and there was a direct line between the consulate and Washington. Its services were merged with the U.S. Embassy, which was relocated to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, back in 2018. Now, the Biden administration has promised the Palestinian Authority will reopen the Consulate General, but it has not yet made good on that pledge or even provided a date for such an opening. It would have been expected that the U.S. would only push forward the matter once the government here had approved its budget, which was last Thursday. It is presumed that this issue will be a growing point of tension between Jerusalem and Washington, along with continued settlement activity, which the Biden administration frowns upon. It's as if the U.S. would need Israel's approval to reopen the consulate, even though the building itself exists and the change is solely on the policy level. The building where the consulate was, by the way, is not far from where I live, and it's also the American Embassy. It was with almost walking distance where I personally live. So Bennett, our Prime Minister, of course, said that Israel's approval would be needed to reopen the consulate, even though the building itself exists, and the change is solely on the policy level. But the policy level is quite important. So our Prime Minister is trying to play it down. He said, "There's so much more that we agree upon with our American friends than we disagree upon." It's interesting, senior advisor for global energy security from the U.S. is due to visit Israel and the Palestinian territories this week. He'll meet with senior Israeli and Palestinian senior officials to discuss energy security. Also, they're going to discuss maritime negotiation with Israeli officials. That's an official American representative. Opening the U.S. consulate, of course, is a thorny issue. And the consulate issue is being tied to another rather touchy issue, which is construction over the Green Line, the line that existed before the 1967 war. The Biden administration is opposed to building plans, while some parties in the Bennett government want to proceed with major West Bank settlement projects. There is a broad consensus within Israel that reopening the consulate in Jerusalem is not only unnecessary, it is harmful, and it is an insult to Israel. A consulate in Jerusalem would be, in fact, undermine the pursuit of peace by giving the Palestinians a false hope, a really false hope, that one day they will have control over the city of Jerusalem. Reopening the consulate, particularly now that the U.S. embassy is located in Jerusalem, would in effect bring Israel's sovereignty in its own capital into question, and possibly also encourage other countries to follow suit. Instead of opening embassies to Israel in Jerusalem, there could be a move to open consulates and trade representations in Jerusalem for the Palestinians alone. Now, it's obvious that our government is eager to repair ties with the Democrats after the Trump and Netanyahu eras, when Netanyahu was extremely close to Trump, a Republican. But both our prime minister and the alternate prime minister must stand firm on Israel's interest. Reopening the consulate for the Palestinians in Jerusalem, our capital, does direct harm to Israel's interests and would not help a future peace process. To gain a consulate in Western Jerusalem in return for nothing but intransigence will not encourage the Palestinians to return to the negotiating table in good faith. Opening a consulate, an American consulate in Jerusalem, would be a tremendous encouragement to the Palestinians to just not really make peace with Israel, because they're getting what they want without peace. So there is no doubt that Israel must continue to stand strong in its opposition to reopening the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem. Now, that's subject number one. As for construction over the Green Line, subject number two, it really is time for our government to decide what it wants, where its red lines are, rather than letting it be determined by outside forces. Here in Israel, there is an internal fight in the government at expanding settlements. For example, the prime minister spoke of authorizing and making formal a settler outpost in a place called Eviatar. And the prime minister plans to move forward to build this new West Bank settlement on a hilltop. Meanwhile, the public security minister, who's from a different party, the Labor Party, pledged to block the authorization of this outpost. So we have an internal problem in Israel, which now is going to surface since the budget has been passed. And with internal infighting here in Israel, it'll make it easier, I believe, for the American administration to make inroads against Israel in the area of settlements which the United States is opposed to. It's interesting, by the way, that the United States is opposed to settlement because it says the settlement will block a two-state solution. In the meantime, the Arabs don't even want to sit down and talk about a two-state solution. So the Americans are pretty much putting the cart before the horse. They're worried about something that is not going to happen in the foreseeable future. That is, the chances of a two-state solution coming up in the foreseeable future is just about zero, if not less than zero. Having said all that, I shall be back after the break.
Hi, I'm Steve Miller.
And I'm Matt Zucker.
Join us for Lighten Up, where we take a look at the week's current events in Israel and from around the Jewish world through a humorous lens.
If you've been paying attention during these crazy times, you know that it's a challenge to parody life anymore. But join Steve and I as we give it the old college try. Not only is being happy an obligation, but life is just too short to take it all so seriously.
So join me, Steve Miller.
And me, Matt Zucker.
For Lighten Up every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Israel, only on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Get back to Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few more words about the relationship of the Biden administration toward Israel. I know this is a subject that I've spoken about before and others talk about it, but since my program is only on once a week, I want to keep this subject in the eyes of the listeners be aware, to follow what happens during the week and the headlines concerning the two-state solution and the Biden administration. The Biden administration's talk about achieving a two-state solution does not seem to impress the Palestinians themselves. According to a recent public opinion poll, the Palestinians believe that the two-state solution is no longer practical or feasible. The Palestinians, according to this poll, prefer to wage an armed struggle against Israel. With such views, it is safe to assume that the Palestinian state that the Biden administration is hoping to establish alongside Israel will be controlled by Iranian-backed terrorists. There's no two ways about it. The findings of the polls confirm that a majority of Palestinians continue to see Hamas and other terrorists as their heroes and role models. The results of the poll also confirmed that a majority of Palestinians continue to believe that violence and terrorism are the best and only way to deal with Israel. Their demand reveals an overwhelming majority of Palestinians have no confidence in Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, who's now in the 11th or 12th year of his four-year term, and the Palestinians are likely to reject any peace agreement that Abbas signs with Israel. Anyone who signs a peace deal with Israel will be regarded as a traitor and perhaps will get the same ill-fated death as Egyptian President Anwar Sadat did, who signed a peace treaty with Israel and was assassinated. It is a consequence with which Abbas is aware, and he knows what happens if you make a peace with Israel. Those who continue to talk about a two-state solution are simply deluding themselves, but also, and worse, they're endangering the security of the Middle East. And this is especially true because of the debacle of the United States' surrender to the Taliban in Afghanistan, which essentially reinforces the feelings of people like the Taliban and like the Palestinian Authority, who don't like Israel and they don't like the United States, and they're emboldened by the American failure in Afghanistan. So the truth of the matter is, all these world leaders, especially Biden, before they link the idea of peace and security to the idea of a two-state solution, the preference is to believe the Palestinians themselves when they say that they, the Palestinians, prefer armed struggle. The idea would be to believe the Palestinians when they say what they say, and believing the Palestinians when they say that they would vote for any leader who supports violence and terrorism against Israel. They should try believing the Palestinians when they say they reject peace with Israel, because they actually mean what they say. Now, the Biden administration is going to resume financial aid to the Palestinians, something which the Trump administration cut off, and are going to try to revive the so-called peace process. But all the time, the Palestinians themselves continue to support Hamas, the Palestinian terrorist group that simply does not recognize Israel's right to exist. Biden himself, speaking before the 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly recently, Biden said, and I quote, I continue to believe that a two-state solution is the solution for the Arab-Israeli conflict, unquote. That's Biden himself. Ironically, on the same day that Biden delivered his speech at the UN General Assembly, another public opinion survey published by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Surface Research showed that many Westerners are clueless about the real attitudes of the Palestinian public. The findings of this poll, taken among the Palestinians by a Palestinian center, showed that the majority of Palestinians see Hamas and other terrorists their heroes. It's safe to assume that the Palestinian state that the Biden administration is hoping to establish alongside Israel will be controlled by Iranian-backed terrorists such as Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and both of these organizations have their declared goal to replace Israel with an Islamist state after killing or expelling as many Jews as possible from the Jewish homelands. So, obviously, the results of this poll are telling Biden that his proposed two-state solution is far from the best way to ensure peace and security in the Middle East. The Palestinians are saying that the two-state solution is the best way to facilitate and expedite their mission of destroying Israel. Unfortunately, at least for the near future, for the foreseeable future, that would most likely play out as a non-solution that could end up destabilizing the area and could possibly draw the United States into a conflict that the American public certainly does not want. The Palestinians are making it clear that any state in a part of West Bank and Gaza Strip will use as a launching pad to capture all of the land from Israel from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. What's important to remember, by the way, is that a semi-independent Palestinian state already exists in the Gaza Strip from where Israel withdrew completely in 2005, more than a decade ago. This autonomous state, controlled by Hamas and other jihadi groups since 2007, has been used as a launch pad for attacks against Israel. By the way, the most important findings of the poll of the Palestinians include a dramatic decline in support for Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and the rise in the popularity of Hamas, as well as increased support for terrorism and against Israel. Now, this finding doesn't surprise those who are familiar with the bellicose anti-Israel rhetoric that is sounded day in and day out by Palestinian leaders, media outlets, preachers in the mosques, and political activists. While the Biden administration is talking to Abbas and his team, nearly 80% of the Palestinian public, according to this poll, want to see Abbas resign as president. This demand reveals an overwhelming majority of Palestinians have no confidence in Abbas, are likely to kill or they'll regard anyone who signs a peace deal with Israel will be regarded as a traitor. Now, they also noted Abbas, now in the 17th year of his four-year term, has no mandate to sign anything with anyone. Most Palestinians see Abbas as an illegitimate leader who no longer represents his people. In short, the Palestinians are telling the Biden administration and are telling the rest of the world that it is a waste of time to rely on Abbas as a leader to market any peace agreement with Israel to his people. These are the facts on the ground. By the way, if the new elections are going to be held in the Palestinian Authority, Hamas and the opponents of Abbas are set to win in any new election. And that is the way it is. These are the facts on the ground. And everything that is produced in the Palestinian Authority by organizations point to this. The Biden administration's decision to resume financial aid to the Palestinians with Abbas doesn't seem to enrapture the Palestinians. Most of them don't want him. And these are the facts on the ground. I'm sorry to have to repeat it again and again, but I want to keep this in the ears of the listeners when they see all the headlines about two-state solutions. There simply ain't no such animal. I'll be back after the break.
Are you tired of political correctness and the fear that you might offend someone?
I'm not afraid to offend you.
Wow, look who's talking tough.
One has to be tough to keep sane today.
Hi, I'm Alan Skorsky.
And I'm Bayla Seabrow.
And join us every Wednesday for The Definitive Wrap as we interview the most sought-after guests and expose progressive trends that masquerade as enlightenment but actually destroy our freedoms.
We are the No Woke Zone, so buckle up to this exciting show.
Buckling up, but I'm driving.
Sure, you can drive, but I'm the navigator.
Tune in for the No Nonsense, The Definitive Wrap Show, every Wednesday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show. We'll be right back.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. As a general rule, over the years in which I've been doing this program, and since it appears only once a week, I like to give the listeners an idea of what's happening here in Israel, and generally not talk about the big international implications vis-a-vis Israel. However, because of what's happening now, particularly the change of the administration in Washington, I'd like to call attention to the listeners of things that are just a little bit under the headlines. And although they're not really local, they deal with Israel's future. And I think that my efforts are to enable the listeners to, they themselves, follow up during the course of the week some of the items that I allude to in this once-a-week program. Now, the next item, therefore, is the fact it appears that the Mideast is no longer a top U.S. priority. Where the U.S. goes, much to the Western world follows, depending on the circumstances. From the first days of his presidency, Joe Biden started implying that the Middle East did not feature among his top concerns. As a consequence, the region has been sinking down the policy agenda of major players like the European Union and its member nations. To other interested parties, this shift in Western priorities must seem like an opportunity too good to miss. When I say other parties, I mean countries like Russia, Turkey, Iran, or even China. With the United States no longer fully engaged, all of these countries are feeling less constrained in pursuing their particular interests in this region, which is simply, as I see it, a recipe for intensifying the chaos here that is not a settled area to begin with. A close Biden advisor gave an interview, and he said, and I quote, "If you're going to list the regions that Biden sees as a priority, the Middle East is not in the top three." That reflects a bipartisan consensus that the issues demanding U.S. attention have changed as great power competition is resurgent, unquote. What he meant was an upcoming struggle for power is going to take place, and it's already started, between the United States and China, and possibly also with Russia. Now, look what's happened. Biden's chaotic withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan, a total failure, regardless of consequences, is taken by friend and foe alike as evidence of Biden's comparative lack of interest in the future of this region. This perception was reinforced when Biden recently informed Iraq's prime minister that he intends to end the U.S. combat mission in Iraq and withdraw all American forces by December 31st. In other words, Biden is pulling out of the Middle East. An organization called the Cato Institute, which is a leading global think tank, recently produced what it calls a blueprint for U.S. disengagement altogether from the Middle East. It said, and I quote, "If Biden can end America's 20-year participation in an unnecessary war in Afghanistan, why not also end America's 40-year occupation of a region of ever-decreasing importance?" So, and that they find no reason in terms of America's self-interest for the United States to engage with the Middle East by any but diplomatic means. In other words, they're pulling out all their military forces. And indeed, there would seem to be few political advantages to be gained from direct involvement in the conflicts and economic disasters rocking this region. Perhaps the only benefit may lie in the moral field, but morality doesn't count in international politics. Now, I'll give an example. The situation in Yemen is described as a humanitarian crisis for at least 2 years, and that nation is on the brink of famine. There's widespread poverty and internal economic turmoil in Lebanon and Syria, Iraq and Libya, all with touching upon catastrophe. The future of these countries, it rests in the balance. Lebanon has the highest proportion of refugees in the world. It's been in free fall since a crisis began in 2019. And now in Lebanon, our neighbor, about three quarters of the population, struggles to feed itself while electricity, fuel, and machines are in a short supply. Libya's been torn apart by a hodgepodge of rival militias since 2015. Iraq is gripped with poverty. It's fallen prey to a determined effort by the Iranians to establish a grip on the nation's institution. And however smoothly Biden manages to take the U.S. forces out of Iraq, the fact is he will leave Iran as the dominant external power in that country, and Iran is Israel's enemy. In his first address to the UN General Assembly on September 21st, Biden entirely ignored the chaos gripping so much of the Middle East. He devoted his address to matters much larger in his mind. They could be dubbed the three C's: coronavirus, climate change, and China. He did refer to the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, perhaps to indicate his intention of abandoning the sort of direct involvement in the Middle East that has marked U.S. policy for decades. So this change in U.S. policy is reflected in the very people that he's appointed in his the American administration. The National Security Advisor downsized his team devoted to the Middle East, expanded the unit that coordinates U.S. policy toward the Pacific region. Biden's new Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, has appointed three special advisors on key issues: COVID, climate change, and China. The Middle East is not on their agenda. So whether Biden will be able to stick to his intention of downgrading America's involvement in the Middle East depends on how he handles his standoff with Iran. It does not seem at the moment to be his intention to stick with former U.S. President Trump's decision to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal. Biden is also speaking of going back into the Iran nuclear deal, which would give the Iranians a nuclear bomb, and which would threaten Israel directly. Following a long period of posturing by both Iran and the United States, the Iranian foreign minister told reporters in September that Iran will return to talks and resuming compliance with the deal very soon. There was nothing conciliatory about his message, which he presented in a very belligerent way. So Biden's reassessment of U.S. strategic priorities has not gone unnoticed by the Arab states, our neighbors. None are enamored with the prospects of a newly empowered Iran moving ever closer to a nuclear arsenal. One result of a perceived reduction in the American commitment to this region of the world may well be an increase in Israel's stature as a leading regional power. Israel is an ally against Iran's ambitions to dominate this region. So this readjustment in the power balance in favor of Israel could well be a faction that pushes Saudi Arabia into joining the Abraham Accords. We do not know. It may happen. The bottom line, as I mentioned in the beginning, is, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not an expert in foreign affairs. My program only airs once a week, and what I try to do is to touch upon items which I hope the listeners will follow up in other ways during the week, the newspapers, radio, television, what have you, because these items are important. They're important to Israel, and I think they're important to the Western world. That's why I bring them up. Again, I only touch upon them because I'm only able to touch upon them. But I want to bring them to the attention of people who are interested in the future of Israel and in the future of Western world and Western democracy. So I ask the listeners to forgive me for not touching upon local things in Israel. There are other things that I want to bring to your attention. Again, many thanks for listening, Jay Shapiro.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.